Welcome everybody to the webinar today on hospital pricing transparency. So as we all know, when you guys saw in our email about this webinar, even if you didn't know or were not made aware before that, effective January 1st of this year, hospitals must comply with the new CMS mandate to post a listing of their current standard charges on their hospital website. And the information must be updated at least on an annual basis or more often as appropriate, in the form of a charge master or another form of the hospital's choice. It has to be in machine-readable format, and it has to include the hospital's current standard charges for all items and services that are provided by the hospitals. So again, what does this mean for SHIP? Well, all hospitals have to comply with this mandate, including all rural hospitals. So yes, that's all of our hospitals. And specifically to SHIP, price transparency training is an allowable investment activity under SHIP. Under payment bundling or PPS investment activities in category E. So I'm really excited today to have all of us together to talk about this, and particularly to have our subject matter expert, Amy Tepp, with us and really talking about what this means for you. And we'll be looking at some of the challenges and tips to help you move forward with your SHIP hospitals as they face this new mandate. So with that, I'm going to introduce Amy and turn things over to her. So Amy Tepp is a CPA and a partner of director of Revenue Cycle with Eide Bailly. Amy has more than 30 years of experience in healthcare finance, leadership, reimbursement, revenue cycle, and compliance. She's worked in the capacity of Medicare auditor, director of reimbursement, revenue integrity, and regulatory review and analysis, compliance officer, and consultant. Amy joined Eide Bailly in January of 2018 and is the Director of Revenue Cycle within Healthcare Consulting. She assists providers by developing solutions focusing on revenue cycle process optimization, charge master development, compliance program assessment, and compliance audit function. So to say that she's a subject matter expert is just to say the least of it. With that, I'm going to turn things over to Amy to go ahead and get started with her presentation. Oh, and sorry about that. I forgot. Cineva is going to pull up a real quick poll for everybody to fill out before we get started. I'm getting ahead of myself here. So if everybody could just take a quick minute and fill out the poll that Cineva has posted on the website. So I feel confident in my knowledge related to pricing transparency. We just have strongly agree, agree, neutral, disagree, strongly disagree. You guys could all take a minute to fill that out. That would be greatly appreciated. Great. Thank you, everyone. I'm going to turn things over to Amy to go ahead and get started. And Amy, just as a reminder, you have to press star 2 to unmute your phone.
Thank you, Kate.
All right. Well,
that was interesting. I'm glad you did that poll. I now know what the audience is in terms of where they sit with their understanding. And I want everybody to understand that you're not alone. It's a very confusing topic. So I'll just go ahead and get started. That's me. We're going to talk. I feel like in order to talk about pricing transparency, I need to talk about some of the things that go into that conversation. So, you know, one of the things that Kate mentioned at the beginning is that we need to, or hospitals need to have their standard charges posted. Well, what does that mean? So I'm going to go into a little bit about what that is. Also, what is pricing transparency? What is pricing? What's the charge? What do all those things mean to hospitals? And quite frankly, a lot of the hospitals are equally as confused. And so that's why we're put this together, because sometimes we'll have hospitals ask us, you know, I need help looking at my charge master, when really they just want us to look at where their pricing is. So it's just so that you all can understand some of the terminology when you're working with your hospital. To start with, this is all part of the revenue cycle, and I won't spend a lot of time on this, but what we're talking about here really fits in what we call the mid-cycle of the rev cycle. So it's those kind of those this revenue integrity box here, and all these things, the coding compliance, that all goes together. So that kind of greenish box those boxes is the mid cycle of the rev cycle. And, you know, in a lot of the smaller hospitals, they don't have, usually it's more business office that you're talking about, those people that they don't have this, you know, huge, system of, you know, departments within the rev cycle. And a lot of those people we know wear multiple hats. And sometimes they can't wear all the hats that, that need to take place within a hospital, but they do the best that they can. So I just wanted to start with, you know, what a revenue cycle looks like. You know, you have your patient access, you have the service that's provided in, be it the inpatient, outpatient, you know, setting, clinic setting, the charge is captured once the clinician does the service, that's then coded, you know, either through going to coding directly or maybe in the charge master. It's actually what we call hard coded. There's actually something in there that drives the code. The revenue integrity function is kind of where you would see the charge master function, sometimes the pricing function. And then, you know, the thing, the charge travels through and goes on to, you know, your business office. The claim gets put together and goes out the door. And I just have on there, there's other factors that impact how things get processed, be it, you know, payer contracts, and just all the different rules and regulations around that. We have some sort of governance and oversight over it. We should, you know, smaller organizations, they might have a, I mean, sometimes they just talk amongst themselves in the business office. Maybe it's their staff meeting. Whatever that is in that facility, there should be something where there's some sort of a touch base looking at some metrics and making sure we have policies and procedures around all the different things that go on within that area. And at times, there should be some sort of periodic assessment. And that one of those things that they should be looking at periodically, at least annually, is the charge master. And so I found it interesting that Wikipedia actually has a definition of what is a charge master. Now, this is the thing that when you hear the posting of the standard charges, this is where the facilities would go to pull that data out and put it on, be it their website, in that machine-readable format. So basically, it's telling you, you know, you'll hear people call it the CDM for Charge Description Master. And really now with some of the systems that our hospitals are on these days, they don't even call it these things, but we still refer to it as such. A lot of the electronic health record systems that they're using that also provide their billing function don't even have what you'd call just, I need to pull out my charge master. It's not that easy anymore. So basically, it's just a comprehensive listing of all the items that they have available to provide to patients and charge for. It's got their charge. And, you know, this it says it contains highly inflated prices. You've probably heard some, you know, I call it the news magazine things, like a 60 Minutes. Everyone's had something about, you know, the exorbitant charge for this procedure, or they charged me $5 for a Tylenol. I don't think you see it as much anymore, but the prices are actually marked up, and we'll talk a little bit about that. And then it's just sometimes it's the starting point for negotiations for patients and their health insurance providers. You know, when we have these now high deductible plans, this becomes another area where hospitals are dealing with patients to negotiate some of that patient responsibility away. And that's, you know, basically the starting point for that. So these are just the key elements you would see in what we call a charge master. It would be, you know, the revenue charging department. So like radiology not only has an expense department, but they also have a revenue department. So it would be that department number, the name of the department, what there's a charge code associated with every item in the charge master, and the description of that code, like in radiology, you know, X-ray one view would be an example of a charge description. And then if there's a CPT code or HCPCS code that needs to go with that description, that is right in the charge master, and it would pull it right from that rather than having coding, having to look at it and put it in there to save time. You couldn't have enough coders to do all of that for some of these things. And then a modifier. Sometimes some of the modifiers are hard-coded, as we call it, versus soft coding. Soft coding would be that an actual coder actually would have to put something in as opposed to being embedded in the charge master. And then something that's called a revenue code, which goes on the uniform bill, UB04, the claim form. That, again, comes into play, you'll see later on in my discussion, where we, you know, how else this impacts that. And then the charge amount, the actual dollar amount of the charge, and I have it highlighted in red because you're going to see me talk about this later on in the presentation. So all of these things I have here are all things that could go wrong, might have problems, impact things with hospitals now that we're in this electronic health record environment. We have a lot of facilities that actually purchase someone else's version of, say, like an Epic or a Cerner. So they're in these affiliate arrangements. They might be managed by one of those organizations to get access and utilize some of those software products. You know, there's ChargeMaster tools to help hospitals manage this. And behind the scenes, there's routing rules. We have to understand how things are entered into the system. You know, even though it's an electronic world, there's still a lot of manual clicking that the clinicians have to do. It's as if they've now become the charge entry people. Years ago, you'd fill out a paper charge ticket and someone else would data enter it. Now, as a service is being provided, they're clicking on something in that system, be it what it looks like a charge ticket in a screen, or actually something just behind the scenes auto-generates the charge. So sometimes facilities are confused even how the charge gets dropped onto the claim form. And then, you know, there's claim edits. It goes through scrubbers. And if they're not managing those things, you can have errors come up with that. Here's where we talk to the hospital. You know, it takes a village, right? I mean, especially the small hospitals. And what's nice about the smaller hospitals is that we all know who those people are. A lot of times if you go to a larger facility, they don't even know who might be the person you need to talk to. But, you know, they know who the business office people are. They can just, you know, it's a lot more informal sometimes. But whatever their process is, the department heads of the people providing these services that we charge for, they have some responsibility here as well. And so as we're adding new services, they need to engage with the person at the facility who's sort of their charge master coordinator, the one who gets those things set up so they can capture the charge. And then annually, we have code updates. Every fall, the American Medical Association, who owns the CPT codes, updates those codes. So to the extent somebody needs to be looking at those, and communicating with the charge master person as to, oh, I need to change these codes because there's some modifications, or I need to delete these other codes because they don't apply anymore. And then are the descriptions right? Did we have a price increase? And then looking at utilization of these codes. And departments should be doing some sort of a charge reconciliation. So who better to know if the charges that came out the next day or within a week or a month, does that look like what we've done in the past day, month, week? It doesn't have to be a real involved process, but some sort of reasonableness test by the department. These are just policies that there's, in the perfect world, we'd have policies and procedures that speak to, how we do these things, who's in charge of the charge master, the room rates we have. And I'm talking about these things because this all gets back to pricing transparency at some point. If you don't know what's in your room rate, then how can you defend your price or talk about it with somebody asking about it? So I point this out because I know nobody likes to write policies. They're not the most fun thing, but they really need to have something, even if it's an informal just document that's out there with a date on it. So people know, well, what's in our room rate? Do we include supplies? How many observation type charges do we have? What types of room rates do we charge for? Do we have just a regular room rate? Do we have one with monitoring? Do we have an isolation one? Supplies, what's the markup on those? Same thing for pharmacy. And then there's also the whole issue around, what do we do with take-home drugs, self-administered drugs, the annual update process I've already talked about. And then the hospital does surgical procedures, that's another area where we're like, well, do we include the supplies there in the procedure? What's the rationale? How did we come up with our methodology for charging? And then if there's after hours recovery, how does that work? If they go to a floor in the hospital, are they able to capture that charge on the hospital floor? Or is it just, magically we're being actually providing it at no charge? And then there should be a policy around pricing. And again, I have that word highlighted in red because pricing and the charge, that's the same thing. That's the same thing we're talking about. You'll hear those used interchangeably. I won't spend a lot of time on this, but one thing is there's also a correlation, especially with critical access hospitals. You want to make sure, so when not only that you have the perfect charge master, and also you could have a great charge master, but if people aren't knowing how to pick the charge, well, there's a problem. But are the expenses and the revenue matching? So, I went back to this thing here. Sorry, we're back there. Okay. Little technical difficulty over here. So back to this. It's really important that the cost and the charges are in the right place on the cost report, because then we take the Medicare charges and we align that, and that's how we come up with what the ultimate Medicare cost is. So the people who work with the charge master should really kind of know who's doing their cost report too, and make sure that you're on the same page, that they know where these different revenue codes are. I talked about those earlier. That all makes sense to people who work in billing. When you talk about a UB revenue code, that's just a common thing that they know. And here's where these revenue codes come in. So I talked about cost and charges being the right place, because the way the facility gets reimbursed from Medicare is based on a cost to charge ratio of those different areas. So what this slide is showing you is the importance of matching the cost of, say, the operating room with the charges to come up with that ratio. And then we apply that multiply that times the Medicare charges for this revenue code. If you see that, it's 360. So revenue code 360 is the OR revenue code. And that same thing, we're just showing you an example. Radiology has, you know, rev code 320 and 350, just emphasizing, you know, the importance of matching and the cost report and understanding that. You know, sometimes we have expenses that are in different departments in an area would be like EKGs. You know, sometimes they're done in the ED. Sometimes they're done in the, I've seen it where someone in radiology does them sometimes. Sometimes the person's in lab. And we need to find out about how much of their time, if they can't do it on their time card when they're doing their payroll stuff, then they need to do some sort of a time study to carve that out so that when we get the, we usually put all that on a one line on the cost report, and then that gets applied to the EKG revenue code. Other areas where we have issues are things like, you know, IV administration, blood administration, supply charges. These are things that could be done in different parts, you know, could be done in nursing. So again, those are things that we talk about with the hospitals to understand where that's done and work through how to best report that on the cost report so they're maximizing their payments there. And just to summarize this piece of the presentation that's talking about the charge master. You know, we recommend that they do an annual update review. This can be done internally. You know, what are the things, what are the codes that are changing based on what they've seen come out from the AMA? Does any of that impact their hospital? And they need to work with those departments. The pricing, if they've, a lot of facilities, and you'll hear more about this a little later, they don't have a strategy around pricing, and I think that's what's confusing to people. This is why you'll hear a lot of hospitals will just do a, well, I just do a 3% across the board price increase. And some of that is maybe they're driven to do that because the states only allow them to do that 3% every year. But there's ways of doing an overall price increase without, you know, just doing it to every charge. It's about being somewhat strategic in that regard. Somehow have some sort of organized charge master team. And if there's been a recent system upgrade or they converted to something, there should really be a review of this to make sure this took place properly post-implementation. One other thing we suggest is that there's this team or whoever's around the charge master or their revenue cycle group, that they have some sort of process that someone is looking at the newsletters from the various payers that they work with, along with the local MAC updates, you know, for their Medicare stuff, any sorts of transmittals that come out of CMS. The CPT changes I spoke about, and then who's ensuring that changes get made if, you know, something comes up in one of these newsletters? What's the process? Now, we've worked with facilities that I'm still in shock when I go in and nobody even knows these things exist, or they don't know how to get access to that information. And that usually is a sign that they're probably not collecting on things that they should be, and they're writing things off that they don't necessarily need to be because they're just not informed as to why maybe claims are getting bounced back. But this is really critical. It sounds simple, and it is simple, but it's just another thing that we see that some of the hospitals just maybe don't have a very, you know, don't have their setup to get the emails from these places. And just what the process is around, you know, making a change in the so-called charge master. What's that process? Is it just an email asking for something? If they're using one of these Epic or Cerner affiliate type arrangements, sometimes those organizations have a charge master group that works with these facilities, and they manage their charge master. They make sure the updates happen, but they sometimes have tools built in there to help the hospitals facilitating that. There should be some sort of documentation. If it is email, that they keep it somewhere so people know, oh, that was changed back in this date, and this is why the change was made. So, you know, we've talked about, you know, make sure that you have all, or the facility has the most up-to-date reference manuals. Just to get, at least somebody should have a copy of the current CPT and HCPC books. This kind of gets back to they should be getting newsletters too. They also should be getting something with, someone should have a uniform billing editor. And then some of the departments might have specific reference manuals. And then, you know, making sure that, you know, maybe you get a discount if you order so many at one time and that somebody's managing that for the facility. So sometimes things don't necessarily show up accurately on the claim form. And this is where I say you can have the most accurate pristine charge master, but we're still having problems. Why is that? Our dollars don't look like they're coming in the way they should be. I know we're busy. I know we're about the same volume. So this is where it's important either to have somebody do some sort of internal review. And what I would call this is like a charge capture review. So it would be taking a sample of some claims, starting with the clinical record, looking at that record, and then comparing it to the detailed bill and then to the claim form. And by doing that, that's where we normally find things to talk about with hospitals. And they don't even know because they're just doing what they were told to click these screens, and we thought it was auto-generated, or we're thinking that the HIM coding department is putting the charge on. So this is where you can find some mischarges. You might want to do some high, like in the pharmacy area, they should be looking at, you know, do we have some high units, high dollar drug charges coming out? Are they capturing observation the way they should be and carving out for those things? And then infusion usually is an area that is complicated. There's a complex, I want to say, decision tree around that where it can be confusing for organizations on how that should work and when I can charge for this and a injection at the same time. And then something that to me, it's very basic. If they're doing the, say, emergency room facility charge and also the professional charge, that it's they can do a simple bell curve analysis by just taking the number of visits for each level for the facility and then for the professional charge and see, is that looking like a bell curve? They don't necessarily need to be exactly the same, but usually you'll find, and we have seen situations where, again, they're on a system and the system automatically is doing a facility charge, and we've seen anything, just situations that were, everything was like a line from the lowest being a level 1 and the highest being the level 5, which that seems a little like suspect. And you'd want to, they would want to look into why that might be happening and if that's really valid. Sometimes they'll have a nurse auditor type person that can help also with some of these reviews, especially in the observation and the infusion area. The charge master review, I mean, this is just what a formal review would be. We basically ask for the charge master and revenue and usage type report for the last year and the current year to date. We're doing a compliance analysis. We upload that into a tool that we use that will tell us either deleted codes or things that Medicare maybe doesn't recognize. And we'll look at a small sample of encounters to do that charge capture piece. And then we meet with all of the departments to go through what we found, look at the, understand their charging practice and how the charges are being selected. And again, as I said, the pristine charge master may not correlate to missed charges or claim errors. So I know that was a lot, and it's not really what you're thinking, oh, pricing transparency. But I felt like you have to understand, well, that whole thing I just talked about was what these hospitals were supposed to then post as part of their standard charges. That's where they would get that information from. So I felt like you needed to understand what that was and what goes into it and some of the potential pitfalls that hospitals run into in managing that and keeping it current and ensuring that the charges are dropping the way they are. So now we're going to talk about the other thing, which is the charge, the price. Annually, I think the CFOs typically would want to know, well, should I be doing a price increase for my budget? So I'm just going to go a little bit into what that involves, and I called it a charge analysis, even though for years we've been calling it a pricing analysis. So I just want to talk a little bit about terminology. And one thing that I think is extremely helpful, and it's something you might want to take a look at, is the Healthcare Financial Management Association's Pricing Transparency Task Force work. It's on their website, and they go through a very thoughtful way, and they start with these, what are these terms? You know, these are the things that people want to understand. The care purchaser, you know, we would say patient, or maybe it's the guardian of the patient. Charge, what does that mean? And cost, out-of-pocket expenses, price transparency, provider, value. Those are all things that are defined as a result of this task force. So HFMA has been talking about pricing transparency for a good long time, and I want to say it was probably, maybe it was triggered as a result of the ACA. It might have even been in the works prior to that. But I highlighted, you know, charge and price. Those are words that get used interchangeably. The cost and price transparency. It depends who the person is, and I'll explain that a little bit here in a bit. So the charge analysis. I mentioned at the beginning, at the onset of this discussion, that the charge master review sometimes gets confused with pricing studies or pricing analysis. Like, I need to know if I need to increase my prices and what that should look like. So I need a charge master review. And so I just wanted to distinguish between the two so that if you hear that when you're out with your hospitals or that you get a question about it, they complement each other. The price is in the charge master. And a lot of times we say, well, if you're going to do I mean, the pricing analysis usually is something the CFO would look at annually, but they may not have a formal study done. But they kind of go together. We're asking for the same data when we do that. So we sort of try to say, maybe you want to just do it at the two together, but they are different things. So what the pricing study is doing, in essence, is it's going to truly validate the strategy that is executed or intended to help develop the strategy. And I'm saying strategy, and I would say a lot of facilities don't have a strategy. Some have one. It's very limited. But this whole transparency and pricing, defensible pricing, is about having a strategy. It's also, when we do the price study, we're assuming that all of the charge codes are properly utilized. And that's why we would ask maybe to have the charge master review done at the same time. But there's some assumptions built into the pricing study. So we ask for the same stuff. We ask for the revenue and usage report, the hospital charge master. But then we ask the hospital to ask us, or to tell us, what 6 to 10 hospitals do you want to be compared to? So we do like a market comparison. You know, if there's a CPT code used, for that particular charge, we generally can match that, with this MedPAR data that we get. They have to have enough utilization of a charge code, so maybe a couple of the hospitals that they ask for, they may not even do a certain type of thing, so then you really can't compare. It kind of impacts your market, and you'd find that a lot with some of the critical access hospitals. It doesn't have room rates, but we are able to sort of back into those. We present them with a report, and then we give them a spreadsheet so that they can kind of do what-if analysis with it. We are looking at where do they sit in comparison to the market and where do they want to be. Do you want to be at the 50th percentile or at the 75th percentile? And maybe you don't want to do that across the board. You want to do it, maybe for this radiology services, I want to be at the 75th percentile, but at something else that I'm more competitive on, I can't be at the 75th percentile. So it's not a straightforward answer. Other things that you're looking at, sometimes you can have the same CPT code that applies to different types of services. So you got to make sure that you're accounting for the fact that, well, this CPT code is used for these, say, three different things, or any type of radiology, be it one view, two view, three views. Well, obviously, you're going to charge more for something that's a two view versus a one view. So you got to take into account those variables. And we do not look at pharmacy and supplies because, as I mentioned earlier with my policy talk piece, those are things that have their own markup formulary that's unique to that area as well as every hospital. So it's very hard to do market comparison there. And sometimes you bundle some of these things. So that's another thing that impacts the charge. We make some general assumptions on, what commercial payers are paying. Now, some places, the states that we work with, most of the hospitals, they'll get like a percentage of charge. Well, then it is somewhat important what that charge is. And if they're not limited and they have a lot of commercial business in that area, that might be something to think about when they're deciding what the charges should be and where they sit with the market. The peer data that we get is generally about a year old, and we have to apply some sort of a assumption on a markup for that. So, what is a charge strategy? What is defensible pricing and charging? I've laid the groundwork, and I'm sure a lot of this stuff is just like, whoa. That's a lot of data, a lot of info, but it all plays into this. So what I tell people is there's a lot of science to pricing, and then there's the art aspect of it. I think a lot of times people think that we do this pricing analysis and it's going to give you the magic answer, and there is no magic answer. We give you a tool, or you create your own tool, if you will, and that then has to play into some things. Here's where the strategy comes in. Am I going to do, and it's not across the board, but maybe it's for certain things, I'm going to make this at such and such percentile of the market. But then when I get to another area, I want to do a cost plus a markup. And as you go through something like a spreadsheet tool, you can actually say how you arrived at that price. So when somebody would call you and say, you know, I really don't get why this price is like this. Why is it so high? I don't think I got charged the right thing. You can go back to that, or the facility can, and say, well, first of all, yes, that is our charge. And secondly, this is how that charge was arrived at. You know, it's based on where we, you know, at market rate. Now, as I say, they may not like the answer, but at least you have an answer. And a lot of facilities, I don't think, can provide that answer, which is why we're kind of in this state of why pricing transparency is important. So I really encourage hospitals to have a policy which defines their strategy and includes the markups of the different types of things, you know, be it supplies, what are they bundling, you know, annual price changes, who can approve those, how often, if there's an interim change or we want to add a new service, what does that look like and who is approving that? I mean, at least a CFO should be involved in that discussion. Other things that facilities need to be sort of sensitive to are, you know, maybe the departments have some skin in the game and they're like, wait, no, we can't increase that price. And here's why. They're closest to that. You might have received a lot of patient complaints on something, so you want to really pay close attention to those different services so that you are sensitive to that. And, you know, I said state sometimes have limitations on what you can do that from a price increase perspective. Your payers have some contracts provisions that they need to be notified of these things up front. So here's the pricing transparency piece. Again, I pointed you to the HFMA website, and this is from there. You know, what they call a charge is the dollar amount set for services provided prior to any negotiated discount. So in accounting world, we call that the gross charge. The price is the expected payment for services provided, which is dependent on whether there's insurance or not. So that's kind of like the net charge, the net reimbursement. And the cost, they're saying, well, that depends on who's asking what the cost is. If the patient is asking what the cost is, to them it means, what's my out-of-pocket? If the provider, the hospital's asking, they're talking about, what's it cost me to provide that service? Insurer, what does it cost me to pay this out on a claim to a provider? And one thing I want to add, the HFMA website, they do have a brochure, And I'm not here to, you know, tout HFMA, but they encourage hospitals to have that available, maybe even have a link to it. It might help them in telling the story about pricing transparency. So why we're here today is we, in the 2015 Inpatient Prospective Payment Rule, which came out of the ACA legislation, they spoke about pricing transparency. It wasn't very specific. And you could simply comply by, if your facility or the hospital had a link on their website to, say, a hospital association website that maybe posted some top 10 charges for certain procedures from certain hospitals, you know, within their member hospitals. Now, 2019 inpatient PPS rule is exactly what Kate mentioned at the beginning. You need to post your standard charges on a website effective January 1st of this year in machine readable format. That means like no PDFs, and must be updated at least annually. So you don't have, once it's been posted, you don't need to update it annually. There were a lot, it applies to all hospitals, even though it's in the inpatient prospective payment rule. You know, large organizations struggle because their charge masters are voluminous. It addresses, they want you to post everything. Even if you have a separate pharmacy charge master, that needed to be posted. CMS has posted what we, these frequently asked questions, and then I think in the middle of December, they added some frequently asked questions. So it was very changing very frequently. And to date, there's still not a lot of clarity around it. I understand that some of you coordinators maybe were at some conference and there was a lot of confusion then. Well, even until this came out in the outpatient rule and then CMS chimed in a little bit more, there was no guidance, and there's still very limited guidance. It basically is that all hospitals have to comply with this. They don't give you any real clear guidelines. And they're encouraging hospitals to, you know, if you want to be more trans, you know, educate patients, go please do that. There's no known penalties right now for this, but I would anticipate this will have some penalties. It's something we're tracking. I've been tracking. I look at this as, you know, other things are, you know, can we put CPT codes in UB codes? At first, there was nothing about that. Then on that additional FAQs, it talked more about, well, yeah, if you're confident you have some thing agreement with the American Medical Association, the right licensure, you can post it. I know one hospital I looked at recently, they did not post those at all. So I wanted to make sure I got to this. These are things that, you know, this is going to be changing. We're going to hear more about this. So what are things that, one thing is, do you know that your hospitals that you work with, have they complied with this? And if not, why? Why have they not? You know, are they having trouble getting their standard charges? Do they not know what their standard charges are? They can't get this info out of their system. Are they unclear of what should be posted? They can't get charges in a machine-readable format. You know, the fundamentals and benefits of defensible pricing and strategy and an accurate charge master. Do you feel like the facilities have that basic understanding? And then the need for structure. Do they have, you know, they get a pulse on their charge master? Somebody owns it. There's some core policies out there for them. to follow. This is an opportunity for the hospitals to be strategic. This is the beginning. This is going to drive them, in my view. They have to be strategic with pricing. So they need to talk through charge methodologies, the charge master, their pricing strategy. If they don't have one, they need to sort of come up with it. And I talked through some things that, you know, you can help them through with some questions. And then, you know, what is being transparent mean? And just, I feel like the more info you can provide the patient, it's only going to help the facility. And some of the questions you might want to ask are, when was the last time you looked at your charge master and surrounding policies and procedures? You know, do you look at it annually? Are you confident that we've captured all the changes and we've inactivated codes we don't use anymore? Or it's been like 5 years since we've kind of had a fresh set of eyes looking at it. And are you confident you are capturing charges in the charge master? You might hear, you know, facility CFOs say, yeah, I just struggle because I just don't, you know, our charges are just not, you know, where they should be. And I just can't understand why. They've had, you know, an upgrade or an enhancement. Sometimes that can cause some of those issues with capturing charges. So, I mean, this is the beginning. It's best for these hospitals to be proactive rather than reactive. Now, we all had to be reactive because we were forced to. But, you know, as things, you know, change and we hear more from CMS about what the expectations are going forward, I think we're only going to see more, you know, more refinement and definition around what else needs to be out there. You know darn well that CMS was out there going on certain, you know, kind of seeing what got posted out there. And I don't know what they're going to do with it, but so that basically, you know, is the presentation. And I know there's a couple minutes for questions if anybody has any. It's not a straightforward black and white kind of conversation, but I sure hope that people have a little bit better understanding about what this, why we're here, why we're at this transparency, and what it is that they're supposed to be posting.
Thank you, Amy. If anybody has a question, just a reminder to, you can press *2 to unmute your line, or you can put a question in the chat box. And as we're getting questions going here too, I'm going to have Cineva pull up the poll, the last poll for us, just so that people get a chance to fill that out before they have to sign off at the top of the hour. And it looks like people are typing in. The first question from Ronnie Ram, are there consequences if hospitals haven't complied by January 1st?
As of now, there are not.
Okay, so no penalties?
No.
Yeah. Okay.
And they admit that. CMS says, yeah, to date, there are no penalties, but it's kind of like, that doesn't mean there won't be in the future. It's kind of like read between the lines.
Yeah. Okay. Do you have a format or have you seen a transparency pricing format that appeals to you?
I haven't, you know, this is all fairly new too. You know, what was out there prior to January 1st was, you know, just kind of left it really vague for people. So I've only seen one hospital so far because I had to do I was talking with them about something, and I'm like, and he pointed me to their transparency thing. And I did like what he put out there. I thought it was very, it was in a very positive, like we're like helpful, you know, we want to help you patient, you know, and they, but then when you got to the charges, it was pretty much the standard charge and the description, and that was it. I don't, again, not real helpful for patients. So I don't know that I can say I've seen one that's great or not. I just, at this point.
Okay, we had another question from Kyle too. Who would you recommend to be on the Charge Master team?
So basically, I would suggest if they have someone who wears the hat of like the Charge Master coordinator, that might even just be like the business office manager, but they might have somebody that has that hat. And then if they have a compliance person, the coding director, manager, someone from IT, and then someone, from finance, if there's somebody not represented there.
Okay, great. Danette, is there any one resource to get all ChargeMaster-related updates rather than subscribing to all individual newsletters?
Oh, that would be wonderful if we could just get it in one spot. That's what makes this so hard. No, there's some subscription type things that you can, that cost money, obviously, but if you work just like if they're in one state and they have their one Medicare contractor, they should just, subscribe to those particular, we still go on there and get our own from all the different Medicare contractors that we work with for clients. We get those things, but we also have a subscription too.
Okay, thanks. So it looks like Scott Daniels is typing in a question. I just have a real quick, and this is complete ignorance on my part. So is there any liability as far as the hospital is concerned with what they put up there for prices in the estimates, or do they just have to have, as long as they have like a disclaimer on there that these are just estimates and it depends on your particular insurance and whatever, does that cover them to be safe from any liability there with posting their charges?
You know, I haven't heard of any hospitals having a negative consequence from that price estimate, but I do encourage exactly what you just described with that disclaimer. That's even with the standard charges, there was talk about just saying, this is just a charge, it may not be exactly what it is you're ending up having to do, but maybe there's a contact person that they can reach out to for more information. I think the more you can just kind of note that things are estimates, the better.
Okay. And I know we're right at the top of the hour here, but we had that question, another question from Scott Daniels. How would you recommend working with hospitals that are part of a system?
That's a very good question. I just want to tell you some of my experience with, and I don't know if this is helpful, but it seems like a lot of the critical access hospitals that are parts of systems that have larger hospitals on both sides, I've talked with the people from the larger hospitals and also those on the critical access hospital side, it's like they don't get each other. The large hospital people don't get and understand the uniqueness of the payment structure and things and how things work out in the rural hospitals. What I suggest, especially with a lot of times they don't get the support either from the small hospital, and they're paying this money to get this Epic or Cerner system or whatever system it is. I just kind of ask, do they have a contact that they work with at the hospital, especially like on the Charge Master side? And if they don't, talking with the CFO to see if they've had any luck in getting some sort of connection with them, it's probably not the best answer, but I know it's a struggle, and I guess it just depends on the relationship. But I know managed facilities here, they feel like they don't get the service from the larger hospital. So it doesn't sound like it sounds like more people have that question than an answer.
Okay, sounds good. Well, I know we are past the hour, so I have taken quite a few notes, and we'll send a follow-up email as well.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I'm happy to answer any questions people have after this that might come to mind. So if they want to send them to you,
okay.
I'd be happy to answer that, and then you can maybe get that out to the group that participated.
Okay, that sounds great. So if you guys have any questions, again, this is Kate, you can send them specifically to me and I'll pass them along to Amy. And then we'll be sending out a follow-up email too with just some of these talking points and everything on how to move forward with this particular topic. So I just wanted to, again, to thank Amy so much for your time today and everybody for joining us, and have a great rest of your day.